Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremen.
And I'm Lara Chan Baker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group, which is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. What originally started as a business conference for artists and fellow creatives is now being turned around to shine a light on our clients. From art buyers and creative teams to fellow producers and managers, this podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as the bridge between clients and creators. It's an ongoing exploration of how to wrangle the creative process to achieve excellence, no matter what the medium. This week, we go back to our interview series and welcome Sarah Ewing from Sarah Ewing Agency, or C, to discuss why anyone in their right mind would be a photography agent and producer. But first, how is everyone going?
I am really well, thanks. A pretty regular Wednesday so far. How are you, Jeremy?
I'm okay. The whole week that has come before has not occurred yet. So, but I'm imagining that it's going to be very good.
And that's because we're recording in advance. That's going to sound very confusing to people. We are recording in advance and struggling to talk about how we are because it hasn't happened yet.
Bianca, how are you? You are in an undisclosed location somewhere in New York City.
I am. I'm downtown in I've actually rented a meeting room via an app called Breather. I kind of love that in New York, you can kind of get anything on demand. And because of the time zone difference, we just had daylight savings shipped over here, which has brought us closer together, which is really nice. But it means that the office that I work from is kind of a bit manic at the moment. So I've rented a nice little quiet room for the recording, which is good.
Yes,
quiet minus all the sirens in the background.
Yeah.
So moving on to some of the mini links in our professional development Slack, let's start off. Lara, what do you got?
This was a piece doing the rounds. It was a Vice article. I loved this. It's definitely worth a read. The title is Why We Need to Reimagine the Starving Artist Stereotype. And this is a series that's supported by Monash University. And the article is an interview, basically, with a professor of various creative and cultural industries there at Monash. And they basically are looking at how, although they're often sort of placed at opposite ends of the spectrum, creativity and, making an income don't have to be mutually exclusive. And, this sort of starving artist stereotype has been perpetuated across generations, and it's sort of become ingrained in us that in order to pursue a creative outlet, it means that, you have to accept the fact that you're going to be broke for a very long time. And it means that people often go for a safer sort of career choices out of fear of financial failure. And the article sort of looks at how this issue is sort of like an endemic miscalculation of value, and how we need to become more sophisticated in the ways that we place value on creative work. And it's a really interesting article looking at how creative things like plays or music or whatever it might be have an actual, obviously a real value to society, but how it's really hard to communicate that value to a government that's so
we're so used to seeing things in economic terms.
Exactly. So used to seeing things in economic terms. And anyway,
this is my, coming back to my big beef with like working with governments on kind of tendering projects, like for art as well, like when it's just kind of looked at as an economic transaction. So yeah, I really like this model here. And it's also interesting, is Monash, which is a university here, kind of providing, is this like a sponsored content thing with Vice?
It says it's supported by them. So I'm going to say yes, but it's actually great content. Like for me, this is the perfect example of advertorial that works.
Sure.
It's really good content and it's been made possible because they've paid for it.
Moving on, keeping our quota of not surpassing one article from Fast Company, because I think, like, looking back this week, there were at least kind of, it was all Fast Company. They were just so good. They are so good. If anyone from Fast Company is listening and they want us to do a podcast about their blog, please let us know. But this post is Your Inspirational Social Media Posts Are Hurting Your Career, which came so, I mean, it really tapped into a lot of angst that I feel, especially kind of looking through LinkedIn, which I kind of, typically really like, but there are, definitely has a smattering of these kind of posts over there, which kind of to me feels like a bit of a outgrowth of blogger type, which is kind of, something that me and Bianca, a bit of a pet peeve.
Live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love. But the thrust of this article is kind of why, if you're trying to come off as someone who is actually kind of influential, like the idea of kind of posting these, these quotes or kind of these photos with kind of text overlaid are actually kind of, it can make you look worse than, what you're kind of intending.
And also, they don't have the outcome that you're intending. You know, it's.
No, and exactly. That's kind of why I really like, you know, the longer form aspect of doing the podcast, where we can kind of communicate kind of some of what we know in a bit more of a nuanced kind of way. And it's just hard, like, you know, you can't get these sound bites just don't actually carry any information of value. And a lot of the time, you know, there's also kind of quotes that are completely fake or completely misattributed. But also that it's something that I think has kind of come up as well, like, you know, from this whole idea of like different apps and software that kind of overlay kind of text on images, like, you know, to get kind of social content. So it's something that's kind of come from, I think, the software as well. But I think if anyone is doing this or knows anyone that's doing this, this kind of gives a bit, you know, you can maybe pass this article along anonymously to somebody. Perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I like about this article is, like, yeah, I agree. They're stupid and I don't like seeing them and they don't sort of work for me. And they've used some particularly dumb examples in this post. But they don't actually really show in any way in the article that it doesn't work. Like, as much as it's stupid and some of them are incorrect, that doesn't mean it doesn't actually have any, like, commercial gain.
B, what's your take?
I don't know. I think, you know, the more that my feed is kind of like flooded with this sort of like hashtag inspo that's really like, you know, vapid and hollow just for the sake of posting something, it just becomes clutter and there's no cut through. And I think that's where it doesn't work.
Yeah, I just kind of, you know, everyone is kind of in this just rush to kind of, you know, create value and kind of be, you know, to be kind of a thought leader or something like that. But this content, even though it's very kind of suitable for the medium of having very kind of fast and very kind of small disposable bits of information, I think it's antithetical to actually developing kind of deeper insight or knowledge. And yeah, I just think it's contradictory.
Undoubtedly, yeah.
But it's good to have an article that kind of puts this into words. So the last thing on our list, B, this was something that was really nice to see. Tell us a bit more about what we found on The Drum about 72s and Sunny and VML.
Yeah, so the 3% conference, I think, was recently, which is all about trying to, I guess, it's highlighting the fact that when it started, only 3% of creative directors in the advertising agency were female. I think that has now, that's now at 11%, but basically 72 and Sunny, an advertising agency here in the US and now in Sydney, and VML were the first agencies to become certified by the 3% movement. And so 3% is an equality advocacy group that creates inclusive cultures in which both men and women can thrive. This certification, to be eligible, the agencies have to meet the standards set by the 3% group, which are all about female leadership, opportunity for advancement, respectful depictions in work, and equality of work, wage, and policies. The interesting thing is that agencies actually have to pay a $25,000 fee for the privilege of becoming certified. But the article does kind of say that, I guess, it's good for business and it's a good way to attract new talent and retain current employees. But I think the interesting thing is that, you know, advertising, as we all know, has really traditionally been a bit of a boys' club. So it's good to see that businesses are recognizing their faults and taking responsibility to make positive change and, you know, actually having, I guess, a bit of a bar to work towards and is really great. So that's nice.
Awesome. Excellent summary, B. We will put the links to that and everything else we spoke about on our show notes, which you can find at jackiewinter.gives.biz. And you can also sign up to our weekly newsletter at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter, where we send out our show notes and notify everyone when the episode is out. So thank you very much. When Jackie Winter made its foray into photography many years ago, we did so in partnership alongside producer and agent extraordinaire Sarah Ewing and her agency C, Sarah Ewing Agency. While C and Jackie Winter are separate businesses now, Sarah is still very much part of the extended JW family. We learned quite a bit during our years together under the same roof. So it's a great pleasure to have Sarah back in the studio here to tell us a bit more about what goes on behind the scenes in the life of a photography producer, while at the same time running the nuts and bolts of a business, including her new dedicated studio space, Atlantic Studios. So welcome to the podcast, Sarah. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
So look, let's just kind of dive right in. I'd love to hear a bit more, you know, about your background and how it kind of led to, you know, where you are now.
Okay.
Big question.
I studied photography at RMIT here in Melbourne. And when I left that course, I think in my heart I knew I didn't want to be a photographer, but I really loved the industry. So I did what a lot of Australians do. I went travelling, mm-hmm. which turned out to be a almost 7-year kind of stint in London. And over there, I did a lot of assisting just to give myself access to meeting other photographers and learning about the industry. And I got really lucky. I met an advertising photographer who gave me a full-time job as as an assistant, but that evolved into project management and producing. I helped him publish books. We curated shows. But yeah, I think I got really lucky with a lot of opportunities to explore lots of different areas of the photography industry that I actually didn't even know existed. You know, and there was kind of, I think even still today, you know, there's still a very minimal focus on how shoots and the industry kind of comes together. So through kind of working with photographers, I learnt about everything that was happening behind the scenes. And I discovered that that's what I was really passionate about. So after working with a photographer for 4 years, I kind of decided that what I'd love to do is kind of have my own sort of roster of photographers that I could have that kind of personal relationship with, but yeah, could work with them to develop their folios and produce their shoots. So that's when I established C. And to be honest, I don't think I really knew what I was doing at the beginning.
Yeah, it sounds like you dove right in. I mean, clearly it's worked out for this, but...
Well, yeah. You know, I think one of the first things I learned about production was... that you didn't really need to know everything or even anything really about what you were doing, as long as you were asking questions, you know.
Yes.
you and I guess being clear in your communication and sort of taking that information on board, you'd be okay.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing that excites me the most about it. I don't know of other roles where, you know, people are coming to you and saying, okay, well, I know, you know, wrapping a car with bubble wrap isn't your specialty, or firing a gun and exploding, a wine glass in a studio, or, you know, or shooting a portrait underwater.
Are these things you've had to do?
These are things I've had to do.
Oh, my God.
but you get the opportunity to facilitate that by, you know, connecting teams and just, asking a lot of questions. So accepting that sort of in the early days was great. And I think that gave me the confidence to kind of approach photographers and sign them and build an industry. And just, again, with the knowledge that as long as I was working with them and we're kind of guiding each other and, I was asking a lot of questions all the time and taking a lot of notes.
Putting myself in young Sarah's shoes, and I'm terrified, at the thought of embarking upon something like that. So, I'm mega impressed at what you've turned it into. I guess it's interesting because in a lot of ways what, Bianca and myself do as producers is there are lots of similarities with what you do as a producer, but there
Absolutely.
Are also some enormous differences given that you are working in photography and we are working in illustration and animation. And so, I mean, I'd love to hear more about some of the ways that it differs and some of the key aspects of photography production that make it sort of challenging and exciting and, you know, all of those things at once.
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, you guys have shared an office with me, so I'm sure you've been accustomed to the chaos that can come with photography production. I think one of the most interesting things about being a photography producer is you, and actually it might be like this for any kind of producer, but you have all the responsibility, but sometimes you really don't have a lot of the control. Mm. And I guess by that, I mean that there are so many kind of moving variables in photography.
Weather.
Thank you. Mm. Weather contingencies.
Weather.
And just all the people that you're working with, you know, there's catering arriving and sometimes that's not on time, or someone forgot the gluten-free option for the client and people are freaking out because there's no Diet Coke. A stylist who arrives with, outfits that simply haven't met the expectation of the art director, who was really hoping for vibrant colours, but what they meant by that was pastel colours, not bold summery colours, which are out in season now. Talent arriving and their agent forgot to tell them to grow their beard and they've shaved it, but it was really important to our brief that we have facial hair. There's situations like that that are crazy because we all know you can't just create a beard on set.
I'm sure people have tried.
I'm trying to think what else, but there are so many variables. But Bianca's right, weather is is the is the biggest. And yeah, you have to, you are constantly trying to find new ways of doing things and solutions and things that no one sort of thought of based on kind of the hand that's been dealt to you. And
I mean, you have to be a particular kind of crazy to become a photography producer, seriously. Like, because there are so many things that can go wrong. The thought of that is,
I think,
so deeply stressful, and I think a lot of people would hate to do that, you know.
Yeah,
every day is that crazy. I mean,
I think, like, even
like it.
freelance photography producers, like, that feels like a whole nother level, you know.
Yeah.
I'm working with a roster of photographers that I've known and have very close relationships with.
Yes.
and you know, we do really work together, but I can imagine, you know, producing the shoot of a photographer I hadn't worked with before, being just, you know, in the situations where you really are pushed to your limits in terms of stress.
Yes.
Having to think outside the box.
Yeah. I mean, I have a few photography producer friends, and I think I'm always so amazed by how adaptable they are and that you have to be. It's like,
I think, and it's just all about attitude, you know, and having a positive outlook. And, you know, every single day I really do sit down at my desk and I go, okay, nothing's a problem. And I know there's going to be problems. And I think, you know, and the attitude thing is really interesting again, I think, with producers working across all different mediums, on the days when, you know, I might not keep it together or I'm frustrated, or, you know, that effect really kind of ripples across everyone. And I think, yeah, I just, for me, as long as your attitude is right and, yeah, you have that positive outlook, at the end of the day, like, it is going to be okay, even if it's pouring with rain and you're trying to shoot a, you know, bathers campaign. Like, it will be.
Oh, absolutely. I think the terrifying thing for me about anything, you know, live action or photography production, is that you have a finite amount of time to do something with an incredible amount of variables and things that could go wrong, and a lot of people trying to, you know, work together to make something happen. And I guess the more that things go wrong and the more that you go potentially into overtime, like, it's such an expensive task to actually produce, whether it's a photo shoot or a live action shoot. And to be that person that is cool, calm and collected, and you know, it's definitely, you know, a situation where you've got a lot of people in the same place, like, whether it's a tiny set or whether it's a huge location, and trying to, I guess, like, manage your own, I guess, the way that you're physically representing yourself in front of a room full of people, and then also trying to kind of control and manage the energy of a room full of people so that you get the best out of everyone. Like, that just seems incredibly overwhelming to me. So I always have a lot of respect for anyone that can kind of deal with, like, yeah, with that sort of situation, whether it's events or photography or live action. I just, I'm in awe.
I mean, I'm interested as well, because you've been doing this for, you know, quite some time now. And I mean, of course, you've sort of used to work for others. You've now been working for yourself. And of course, your business has sort of evolved in some ways. But essentially, you've been doing the same role, you know, over all this time. And I wonder, do you feel that the role of the photography producer has remained the same over all this time, or has it shifted?
I guess it's changed because it's bigger. There's kind of, it feels like there's more to manage and more voices to listen to, and but also, I think the obvious, like, you're having to do more for less. And I just feel like, especially in photography at sea, working with all photographers, you know, every month, where every year, we're trying to produce these campaigns and work with great people and great talent. There's a lot of motion requirements now. Shoots are being tagged on the back of, like, a TVC or a video, and you know, we're working with these budgets for people that I guess would function in stills, but suddenly they have to be act as well, or do voiceovers, or I think there's just, but I, you know, everyone's feeling that.
I mean, it definitely carries across to some of our artists as well, you know, that they're having to do sort of behind the scenes social content and stuff rather than just create the artwork. You know, they're being filmed doing that, and then they become performers as well as just executors.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, even sort of more from a production sense, I think people are still asking for high production, and whether that be, like, great locations or great talent or amazing styling or set building or, motion as well as stills, all in a half-day shoot, because that's all they can afford the studio for. it just, you know, but we're doing it. We're having to sort of find more and more creative solutions for doing it for less and less money.
Well, I mean, and that, I guess, brings us back to the fact that, you know, everyone is kind of diversifying in their own kind of way. So,
yeah.
You know, that's something that we do a lot of here at Jackie Winter, you know, try to have many different income streams and in different ways possible. But I think obviously, yeah, expectations from clients and artists are different, like depending on the medium that they work on and in, and in terms of how fast kind of things are changing with all those things. So talk about a bit more how, yeah, what you have kind of done recently. I think the studios is a really interesting angle that you've brought into your practice. Where did that come from?
C's home was with a design agency and then with Jackie Winter, and we'd always just had a couple of desks. And I guess it started with just wanting to grow and wanting more physical space to work in, but also for the photographers, for a place for us to kind of meet, for us to sit down and, you know, pull apart and pull a folio back together, even just during shoots being able to kind of store equipment, or just really, I guess I wanted to be able to do more for the photographers. And at the same time, you know, we were working in a lot of studios and there are amazing studios out there, but I really liked the idea of kind of customizing something that would really sort of work for us. I was always getting feedback from the photographers on the kind of space they wanted and what they wanted access to and how they wanted it to be run, and that they would always really love, you know, me to be on set with them. And so it seemed kind of obvious to create an office that could also, that could kind of live within a studio, which was a space that we could run out. And absolutely just kind of, I think the studio has been interesting, like in a way, I wanted to kind of to grow see and grow like my profile and grow within the industry, and at the same time I wanted it to kind of assist C, and it's kind of done that, but at the same time they're separate businesses.
So how would you describe then what your role kind of actually is now, like when, you know, when you have to describe kind of what you do, you know, to strangers or people on the street, kind of, you know, what are you in the business?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I still call myself a producer, so I in terms of C, I'm an agent, and I've curated this roster at C, which I'm really proud of. And with all of those photographers, I'm working with them individually on strategies to kind of develop their folios and their careers and go after their dream clients and help them achieve what they want within their career. And then I'm producing their shoots. And I'm a producer. And then I guess with the studio, that's something that I sort of founded with my partner. And I'm kind of more the production logistics side of it, making sure that people are having a great kind of experience when they're using it and responding to the feedback we're getting after each booking. And James manages the kind of the business development side of it. And
Yeah.
Cool.
And in terms of, I mean, I think one of the things that we're always kind of struggling with is, you know, is proving, or not proving, but, you know, demonstrating kind of our value to the process, like, you know, with both our artists, with clients. And I remember one of the things we worked on very early together when we were originally sharing a space was you producing a body bag for a photo shoot. There's many, many stories like this where you had to, you know, source something kind of interesting. And I think, yeah, the skills to do that is quite rare, and I think
strong powers of persuasion, Jeremy.
Indeed. I mean, what are some of the misconceptions that you come up against, like when people that you think people have with producers and agents, in terms of what your kind of role actually is? Is there anything you want to set the record straight on here?
Such a good question. I was thinking about this over the weekend, and it is something that we're coming up on a daily basis. A lot of clients can access photographers very easily these days, and they don't necessarily feel like they need a producer or an agent to form that connection. They can sort of reach out themselves. Definitely see any level of production or management as an additional fee that essentially they could take care of themselves. However, you're still the first one to get the phone call and hold all the responsibility when something's not going right or someone needs a quick fix or a solution or a contact. Yes. I know I haven't...
nodding our heads. And
just nodding in unison.
It's exhausting actually constantly having to kind of sell your value. And it's funny, even sort of my hesitation, it's funny that I'm sort of struggling to answer this question when I stop and think about it, because it is absolutely part of my role daily, and I'm doing it with the photographers when I'm giving them the confidence to, quote out a job and let them know that, you know what I mean, that we need X amount of involvement, or I need to be there on set. And I'm doing it with clients every time I make contact with them, because a lot of clients will say to me, can I just get the photographer's number, or can I just speak to them? So it's constant, like, all the time. I'm sort of having to sell in that value, and it's tiring. But
I mean, I think to that end, like Jeremy mentioned, you having to produce a body bag for a shoot. I mean, what are some of the crazier things you've had to do for your work, or, you know, big problems you have come across that you've sort of been there to solve?
Gosh, well, we just did a really interesting shoot. I worked very closely with the photographer, James Newman, so I certainly can't take credit for it all. But a client came to us with a brief about wanting to have a wine glass deconstructing for their campaign. So James and I tracked down an armourer who actually came to our studio with a gun, and he fired the gun into the glass, and James captured the glass deconstructing and like shattering into thousands of pieces.
Oh my God.
And that was a really, really interesting shoot. We had to do a lot of research into the safety of having a gun on set. from the obvious stuff, notifying. We had to notify the police. We had to tell all the neighbors in case they heard a gunshot. We had to source this polycarbonate board, which we all had to stand behind, just in case any of the glass or the gun kind of went off site and went somewhere else. We had to get headphones for everyone, for the client and the crew, so that they were protected by the noise. We had the assistants and the crew in gum boots and protective gloves to make sure they weren't cutting themselves when they were cleaning. And it was really crazy. We ran tests for a whole day in the studio with plastic glasses before we then brought the real glasses in. And then even with that, there was a lot of things to work through. How many glasses do we need? We had about 100 on set. And James had this amazing equipment that could control when his flashes went off and capture the point at which the glass kind of exploded, and it was sort of controlled with a timer. Jeremy, you would have loved it. We got down to like milliseconds of at what point, you know, we were sort of, at first we were capturing the bullet just as it was touching the glass but not exploding it, and then if we sort of slowed it down a little bit, the bullet was going completely through the glass and the whole thing was deconstructing before we caught any of it.
Oh,
so
God. See, yeah. This to me is the perfect example of when a producer is like vital, something like that. I mean, like all of the tiny little things that have to be thought about and checked and done and whatever, that is the producer's role, I guess, in all this.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then even on the day too, you know, if someone had like rung the police or someone, you know, again, like Bianca talked about, we had a lot of people there. We were paying an armourer for a certain amount of time. We'd hired a studio. We had clients on set. We had a stylist. We couldn't really afford to sort of shut shop, or, you know, so you need a producer there to make sure everything's running to plan, that if police did knock on the studio door, there would be a contact there that would know how to manage that, just to ensure that the shoot could keep moving forward.
So as a producer, I mean, the most fun things I can imagine is, setting up these mini productions and getting to work with so many experts and craftspeople there. You know, you're working with all these people, you're engaging with all these people who are kind of producing their own work in their own kind of way. What do you think is like the thing that an artist or a production partner can do, like, that makes your job the easiest? Like, are there any things that you kind of see or that you wish people would do that, you know, helps you be a better producer?
I mean, look, I really do think everything's about attitude. And I think, you know, the best jobs, even the most challenging ones, when I've been able to jump on the phone with an agency or a stylist or, and I guess we go back to that kind of scenario where there's terrible weather and we're trying to, you know, get something with blue skies. I think when everyone can kind of keep their cool, you can with a level head, you can find a way forward. And everyone's, it's just interesting though, because I think everyone kind of looks to you for that answer. And also, I did say before that, you know, I think your attitude kind of sets the tone and has a ripple effect across the full team. So I guess if your attitude as a producer is great, everyone else's will be. But it's communication too, like being available. The toughest jobs that I've done have been the ones when people aren't responding to my email and I can't get people on the phone. And, you know, it's really, really stressful because timings have been set and there are large groups of, you know, up to sort of 30, 40 people involved if you've got talent and, you know, assistants and a motion crew. And really, I think you just, yeah, you've got to be available.
And yeah, I mean, that skill is something that I think some people are kind of born with and some people develop it as well. Like, I would definitely define you as someone who is very unflappable as opposed to myself, who's very reactive.
Very flappable.
Are there things that you do kind of in your life, you know, outside work that you think engender that quality? Or like, how did you...
Do you have a life outside work? That's the number one question.
Yeah. Wow. What a great question. Well, I have just started personal training and I did it this morning.
Nice.
And I definitely think that's an outlet. But I joined Jackie Winter in doing mindfulness, and I try and do that, but it's kind of more sporadic. That really had an impact on my life and on my brain, and being able to sort of compose myself before the beginning of the day, and my kind of constant mantra of nothing is a problem. Mm-hmm. Nothing is a problem. God, I don't know. I just like to work with good people. Like, I feel like even though I'm running a business and I think the role of a producer is sort of, I wouldn't say it's lonely, but you're sort of managing a team, but you're sort of the head, aren't you? But I think I feel really fortunate in sort of being able to build C and have this roster of photographers that are all my friends and are all kind of like they're championing me as much as I'm championing them. And so I'm not really alone in that, and just so many good people, you know, around me.
Well, I know I certainly enjoyed working with you. In particular, there was a day that you brought back like hundreds of meat pies from a shoot. And my housemates really enjoyed that as well. So thank you.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received, either kind of, you know, on the job or outside the job, that you think kind of that you keep with you to this day?
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, it actually comes from a resource that you gave to me. It's the chameleon effect, and it's from that project management guide, the Good Guide of Project Management.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like that. I think, you know, systems and processes are really, really crucial, and I have a lot of those in my work and on my computer and on my lists. But I think the chameleon effect is about sort of recognizing that everyone else around you does things their own way, and when you're producing, you need to be aware of the team of people that you're managing and how they work, and kind of adapt to that. And I guess a really sort of simple example, and something that I'm up against every day, is you know, I love to document everything on email, because there's sometimes I'm managing up to 15 projects and working with different photographers, and I think it helps the people around you if everything is written down. But photographers are rarely in front of their computers, and they're rarely even kind of able to look at a phone. They're driving, they're checking into airports, they're on locations, they're out of range, they're in helicopters. And so I think, you know, being a photography producer is really about kind of, yeah, I guess accepting that you've got your own system, but also making sure that you can kind of adapt to communicate the things that need to be communicated to a photographer and to clients, and to, yeah, stylists are always on the run too. Whoever you're working with, they might not necessarily use Wunderlist or Basecamp or Slack or even, you know, have a smartphone. Like, they're out there, you know, so...
I think that's
absolutely I think the best advice that that I've been given, and I really try and remember that, even when I just really, really want people to read my emails and write back to me so it's written down.
Speaking of, you know, email things and writing other kind of software bits and pieces that help kind of project management, are you seeing any kind of trends that are kind of coming up either in kind of photography or advertising that you're particularly excited or interested in?
The motion thing is exciting and a little bit scary for a stills producer. I am starting to produce motion shoots, and it was something I was very hesitant and almost a little resistant about at first, because it is so different to stills. I'm excited that, you know, our photographers are starting to, and all photographers are now getting the opportunity to direct, and we're getting to kind of see their aesthetic kind of crossover into something other than just still frames. That's really exciting. Mm.
And how do you kind of compete with all of the other kind of stills photographers and motion people kind of working? Like, it is kind of something that is kind of growing. So what do you kind of do as an agent, or what do you try to get your artists to do to kind of give them a bit of an edge in the industry, both kind of locally and internationally?
Yeah, I mean, I still really believe that, you know, a great idea is what a photographer can sell and separate themselves from the crowd. So I'm constantly, my photographers hate it, but I am always asking them what they're working on outside of their commercial practice. Mm. And yeah, and I really encourage, kind of almost bully them all to be shooting personal projects. I think
we do the same, don't worry.
And I think, you know, ongoing personal projects are really special because they do give, you know, I guess the people in the industry that you're marketing yourself to, or they're going to commission you, the opportunity to follow them and check back in and see what's evolved and talk about something that they've liked and follow it. And from my perspective, in terms of, I guess, you know, needing reasons to get in touch with people, like as a producer or as an agent, an ongoing personal project is a great way to open doors. And, you know, you can really take stock when an art director responds to work that they love, and you can go back a few months later and say, hey, we've got a little bit more. So, they're hugely satisfying. They're great to sell. They're the kind of projects that get published in magazines. They're the kind of projects that, the kind of ongoing large series, are the kind of things that often get picked up in awards. And yeah, they have so many benefits. And yeah, they're really fulfilling too. And
totally.
Speaking of being fulfilled, Sarah, is there a project or accomplishment that you're particularly proud of, that you kind of consider like either a personal or career highlight for you?
A couple of years ago, I worked with Daniel Bowd, one of our photographers, and we shot the entire cast of the Australian Ballet, and it's always a dream working with dancers.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was a really, really amazing, really amazing shoot.
Plus you get to go to the ballet now.
And I get to go to the ballet now, yeah.
So, look, we've unfortunately come to the end of our time. As much as I could talk to you all day, every day, Sarah Ewing. I guess just to, you know, to sort of wrap up, I'd love to hear, you know, what's next for C? What do you see in its future? What do you see in its future? Good one, Laura. and, you know, what's your dream for the company?
Oh, wow. Big question. We've started representing stylists, and that's something that I'm really excited about and what I'm trying to sort of build on now. I think we're very known for photography, but I'd love us to be known for styling too. So, yeah, I'm looking at a lot of stylists at the moment and seeing who can sort of complement the photographers and the work that's coming through the agency, and how we can start sort of pitching ourselves to clients as being able to sort of have both those offerings. I think working in teams is really exciting, and I love the relationships that I've developed with the photographers, and I'm looking forward to I guess growing the team of artists that we represent and hopefully having them all work at Atlantic Studios.
And Sarah, if people want to find out more about you and C and Atlantic, where can they find you?
Our website online, I guess, sarahewingagency.com. The studio site is atlanticstudios.com.au. And you can also find us on Instagram at Sarah Ewing Agency. And our Atlantic Studios handle is atlanticstudiosau.
Excellent. Awesome. We'll put all of those links in our show notes and wish you the best of luck. Thanks so much for coming in, Sarah.
Thank you.
So much fun.
Closing out our episode like we like to do every week is the most Melbourne and most New York thing that's happened to us this week. Laura?
I did pretty much nothing this weekend, so I just don't have much to share. But I did do something that I think is distinctly Melbourne. I went down Sydney Road and went to like four Lebanese bakeries, and I bought I bought all this like baklava and falafel and like all these other things that I can't remember the name of, but they were so good.
Lebanese pizza?
Like, yeah. Pizza? Hell yeah. It was so good. With the intention of bringing it home for my housemates to get like brownie points, and then I ate like 90% of it on the way home.
Do you know what? You've just inspired me to see if I can find some Lebanese bakeries in New York.
I am very inspired.
Because I miss that.
Bianca, what is your New York thing of the week?
The New York Marathon was recently here in New York, and apart from social media highlighting the fact that people who I thought were at a very similar fitness level as I am were running an actual marathon, it also presented quite a logistical challenge to get from one side of Williamsburg to the other. Bedford Avenue, Manhattan Avenue were completely closed, and like, it's not like, you know, just like a trickle of people running. There's like literally hundreds of people every second running past, like down the street. So I wanted to get to the west side of Bedford Avenue, and we worked out that we could change at a particular subway stop and walk underneath. But I don't want to, I'm kind of embarrassed about how many times and how many, like how long it took us to actually work out how to get to the right side of the road from underground.
Very good, B. I, once again, do not have anything because...
You're being kicked off the podcast, Jeremy.
Sarah, can you bail me out here at all? Do you see anything in the last week? Or I mean, you get a bit more scope because it's been a while. Anything that's been particularly in Melbourne for you?
I feel like every weekend there's a plant warehouse sale. I went one in Collingwood.
Oh, you are so right.
When did plants just become so huge?
Plants are such a thing. My Facebook feed is full of plant warehouse sales. I'm too scared to go.
Well, it's from that article. It's filling the cold dead space inside your heart.
Oh, yeah. It plants. It works.
We took the dog. People were having coffees. We hung out there for like an hour.
Were there any plants left by the time you got there? Because everyone tells me that if you don't go before like 8 a.m., there's no plants.
We were one of the people that went really early.
Of course you were.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bianca.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz, and you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter specific to the podcast at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/jackiewinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details are on our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Also, one second, I've lost my dog. No, she's just lying down there. Okay, that's fine.
Okay.